Hey, this is Jenny. Happy New Year. If you're a subscriber to the Hashtag MWriting podcast, you can join us in our Blueprint Challenge, which is starting on January 12th. We're going to be working on new book ideas, books where we're stuck, and books that we're revising, and using the Blueprint framework to help us get unstuck, get clarity, get confidence, and move forward. KJ is leading the charge this time with some write-alongs, some Ask Me Anything sessions, and all kinds of good stuff to help you on your way. I'll be jumping in as well, and we'll be cheering you as you get your books into shape and get ready to write forward in 2026. Details are in the show notes, and we'd love to have you join us. Hi, I'm Jenny Nash, and you're listening to the Hashtag MWriting podcast. This is a Write Big session where I'm bringing you short episodes about the mindset shifts that help you stop playing small and write like it matters. Today, KJ is joining me, and we're talking to Jessica Cozy about the shift in identity from being a book publicist to being a writer, which is a Write Big moment for sure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So this is just the coolest situation. You're a HarperCollins publicist. This is your day job. And you just shared with us that you're talking to us on your lunch hour.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you do? What is your job?
Sure. So I'm a publicist for HarperCollins, specifically for their William Morrow imprint. So we do adult fiction and nonfiction across everything. Romance, cookbooks, celebrity, fantasy. We do a little bit of everything. And so my job as a publicist is to pitch podcasts like you and TV and newspapers and media, and to get our authors to book interviews, to book review coverage. So I like to tell my family when I try to explain my job that whenever you turn on the Today Show and Jenna's talking about a book, that was the work of a publicist. Or if you open the New York Times and you see the 10 best mysteries to read this month, that was the work of a publicist. So that's the kind of stuff I do in my day job, and I absolutely love it.
All right. So you have to tell us, did you dream of being a book publicist? How did you get into this?
I did. So when I was younger, I was.
I love that. Thank you. I thought she was going to be like, nobody dreams of being a book publicist.
Actually, that's part of the story is I was always a big reader and writer as a kid. And I knew when I was in middle school, I knew I was going to go to college for English. But at the time, the only things that I really could think of that you would do with an English degree were to be an editor, which I hate the revision stage of writing. My editor is a gem because she does it. I don't like that part. I love the blank draft. That's actually my favorite part. But I didn't really want to be an editor. And I didn't really think I had the patience to be an English teacher. So I knew I wanted a degree in English, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so when I was in middle school, I started a book blog with one of my really good friends. And we just started reviewing books for fun. There was no ambitions behind it, just talking about books we liked. And then at the time, that was back when blogging was big. And at the time, it was one of the bigger YA book blogs. So publicists started reaching out to us to send us review copies and things like that to cover.
And when you were in college?
No, I was in high school. I was a freshman in high school.
This is high school.
High school? Dream.
Yes, I was a freshman in high school when we got, I think, our first pitch from a publicist. I believe it was St. Martin's, if I remember. And that kind of,
did you even know what it was?
I did not until that moment. That's kind of when the whole road opened up in front of me. And I was like, there's a whole new avenue to loving books that I can do a whole new career with. And I was a freshman in high school when I told my parents I wanted to be a book publicist. And they were like, how do you even know what that is? How did you even figure that out? So that is when it started. So since I was a freshman in high school, 13 or 14, I knew I wanted to be a book publicist, and I knew specifically that I wanted to work at HarperCollins. I loved all their books.
What?
It is the running joke. I've been at HarperCollins for 4 years, and it's the running joke that I still skip into work every morning. I love my job. I'm very, very grateful. I'm truly working my dream, not just being a publicist, but being a publicist at the company I dreamed for. So it makes even the long days good days because I absolutely love what I do.
How did you get the job?
So that was, I graduated college in 2020. So we know how that went for everybody involved. So I had a few different internships, not at HarperCollins, but at other publishing houses. And then right when I graduated into COVID, all of the publishers were having hiring freezes because, everything that was going on with the pandemic. So I figured I needed to do something in the meantime. And so I actually was the admin assistant for the Brooklyn Book Festival, which was not my dream job, but it was in the field of books. And it really helped me I made a lot of connections with book publicists through that when we booked the authors for the festival. So I did that for a while and I really, really loved it. And then after one of my internships, I actually had interned at HMH, which HarperCollins owns now, but and they folded it in, but they didn't at the time. And so I actually ended up getting my dream job because my former boss at my internship at HMH got folded into HarperCollins when we purchased them. And then so she was the one who actually reached out and said that there was an opening, not in her department, but in a different one in HarperCollins. And then I applied and I got very lucky. The rest is history.
That is an incredible story.
Thank you.
Okay. So many people are more on the side of, well, I always wanted to be a writer, so I knew I would do something with books. And this is what I fell into. And, you know, then it was hard to write because, so now I'm wondering, and I'm just totally seizing this from Jenny, sorry. But do you think that made it easier to also be a, like so many people are like, oh, I use all my writery energy in my job, but you actually use your job energy
yes.
in your job. So the writer energy is maybe different. And now I'm wondering if it made it easier for you.
I think it made it easier in the way that because I know how the sausage gets made, I actually know how hard it is to get published. I mean, I know many authors that don't work in publishing do know that, but having a first person glance behind the curtain, I do know how difficult of a road it is to get there. And I think that kind of helped me in a way, like temper my expectations. Like I had my MFA and I had been working on books and we were out on submission for a while. And I had really gotten to the place, actually the night before I got my book deal, I was talking to my boss and I had gotten to the place where I had said to her, listen, like, I'm not hearing back from any editors. And I'm like, maybe it's just not meant to be. And that's okay. I know how hard it is. Maybe one day it'll happen. And then 12 hours later, I got the call from Penguin Random House. So I think it helped me in a way that it fueled me because I see how difficult it is. I know how lucky I am to be in the position that I am. And I don't want to like waste any second of it. And I really want to like soak in every moment of being an author because I know how difficult that road can be to get there.
So you said you know how the sausage is made and how big a role luck can play in it. Did that ever stop you from thinking, yeah, no, I don't want to be on the other side? Or did you think, well, I see it happen to all these people, so maybe it can happen to me?
I think it was a bit of both. I am a very stubborn person in the sense that when I said I want to be a publicist at 14, I said, I want to be a book publicist at HarperCollins. I was very specific about that. That did not waver in all the years I was in high school and in college and in grad school. Anybody that asked me, that's what I would say. And I didn't waver. And similarly, I did say to people, like, I am going to be a published author one day. How I get there, how the road curves to get me there, I don't know. But I think in a lot of ways, because I saw people's dreams come true every day, even though I knew how hard it was, I knew it's not impossible. You know, we publish books from super established writers that have really long, long careers, but we also publish books from writers who started writing a story on Wattpad that they didn't think was going to go anywhere. And then it blew up and they got a book deal. So I think in a lot of ways, like, even though I did know it was hard, I was seeing that magic happen for people every day. So I would tell myself, like, even when we got a rejection from an editor or I didn't hear back about a book, I'd be like, listen, like, maybe this is not the time, but there will be a time. I don't know when, but there will be, even if this is not it. So it kind of kept my hopes alive, I think, too.
Wow. Such an interesting story. So we're talking in these episodes about the mindset shift and the identity shift that it takes to be a writer and to step into your full power. And I'm wondering if there were things that you know from your publicist work that you thought, all right, if I'm going to do this, it's going to be in this genre, or it's going to have these tropes, or it's going to have, like, was there any, you know how we, KJ and I are always saying you can't write to the market. Like that doesn't work. But
yes,
knowing what you know, how could you not write to the market?
You're allowed to write things that people want to read. You just can't write for the market.
Exactly. I think for me, I always knew I wanted to write romance. And I just happened to get lucky that romance has been and probably always will be the best-selling genre of all time. It keeps the lights on at every big five publisher. Like that's just the facts. Is writing romance keeps publishing alive. And I knew that that's something that I really, like, I always was a big rom-com reader. My dad is really into rom-com movies. Ironically, my dad is like this big, gruff, like former detective, like serious man, but he is obsessed with like Mamma Mia and Ever After and Crazy Rich Asians. Like, so I grew up really having a love for romantic comedies. Like, my favorite 50 First Dates is my favorite because I used to watch it with my dad. Like, that was like something that meant a lot to me. And I think for me, I always knew I was going to write about love because I just, first of all, the well is never empty. There's always a new love story you can tell. And I just think, like, I love love. I love writing about people falling in love, especially YA for the first time. Love is very scary. The first time you fall in love, you also don't know what the hell you're doing, or what you're supposed to expect. So I knew that that's always what I wanted to do. And I think working in publishing, it didn't make me want to do that, but it helped fuel me because I knew how important writing is in the publishing sphere. But I already knew I wanted to do that beforehand.
How did you choose to go in the YA direction for your first book? And is that where you think you'll stay?
I do. My MFA is specifically, my creative writing MFA is in young adult fiction. That's what I chose to specialize in. I think to me, I read young adult and adult, but I love writing young adult because the stakes are so much higher. For teenagers, they're going through everything for the first time. Everything feels like the end of the world. Like, I remember when I was 15 and I failed my road test the first time and I came home and it was like my world was over. Like, locked myself in my room, didn't pick up the phone and talk to my friends. I was like mortified. And now looking back at 27, I'm like, that was ridiculous. Like, you passed again the next week. Like, you were fine. But in the moment, it feels like everything feels so much higher stakes when you're that young and you have no life experience yet. And I think that's what makes YA, what makes writing YA a little bit different and a little more exciting for me is that you're not just, everybody goes through love and heartbreaks and loss and grief. But as a teenager, a lot of that is the first time you're experiencing that. And that adds a whole nother layer to the writing.
So your book is called We've Hit Turbulence, and it's coming out from a different Big Five publisher than the one you work for, which is so interesting. Did you ever think, oh, I want my own company to publish it? Or did you think, no, I gotta go elsewhere? Did you not care?
I didn't care. We did submit to all of them. So we did end up submitting to HarperCollins too. Penguin is the one that ended up biting first and offering the best offer. I think for me, like, I really didn't care where I landed in terms of like, I wasn't either way, like, I need to be with Harper or I don't want to be with Harper. But now that I'm not, I think in a way it kind of did work out because I think it's better to keep like my work and my writing life separate because working at Harper, you know, I have access to a lot of databases and things that our authors don't see. And maybe I don't need to see every individual stat about my book, like looking it up, like the nitty gritty, like details of my book, the way the staff can see it. So I think in a lot of ways that separation has been good. It's been interesting to be at it, like be an author for a different company and see how things are done there and how things are similar and how are different. And
ooh,
I do think it ultimately was a good choice.
What's the worst, like, what do you know that none of us could know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the worst part about what you know now that you're on the other side?
I mean, it's not something I know for my books, but something for my job is that, like, I'm able to see exactly how many copies of a book every indie and major bookseller in the country is carrying. And I can see when there's authors that want to pop into their local store to sign copies, and I can see that there are none there. We do obviously, like, we, if they give us a heads up in advance, we reach out to the store and we try to organize things. But I think, like, I have access to, I can see, like, down to the decimal, like, exactly how many copies of a book have sold, how many have been returned by bookstores. I think that's information I don't need to know about my book. I think I'm fine not knowing that.
Wait, so are you actually having to actively hold yourself back from going to look at that?
No, because I can't see it because I don't work. It's for Penguin Random House. They can see it.
Got it.
But for myself, like, I can see it for the authors I work for.
Yeah.
Not that I've really ever checked that, but that is information that is at my fingertips if I wanted it to be. And I feel like if my book was in there too, I might like feel compelled to look at that. And I'm like, I don't need, for my mental health, I don't think I need to know that.
KJ, you like look like you're burning to ask a question.
No, it was more that it's a different, PRH does a dashboard that's different than other publishers, and you can't see that. So it's still,
yeah,
healthy.
You can see your sales. Yeah, no, you can see the sales, but I don't need
best.
To see everything.
Don't look at that. But,
yeah. No, I don't look at my reviews either. I actually appointed my boyfriend to check Goodreads like once a month and send me like the good reviews of my book that would make me happy. But I'm like, I don't need to go see the things that people didn't like, because I will just beat myself up over that. And that's just like,
you
listen,
can't unhear it.
Not everybody's going to like it. And that's totally fine. My writing won't be for everybody. I don't need to know who it's not for, though. They can talk amongst themselves. I don't need to see that.
So I'm curious, because you pitched us your own self directly. You have a publicist at your publisher. How are you behaving as an author differently because you know exactly what's happening?
That was definitely an interesting switch. A lot of the authors that I work with at HarperCollins don't have this type of experience. So I'm usually taking the lead and I'm coming to them with these opportunities and things like that. And I am so grateful for my team at Penguin Random House, because they all do know my background. And so when I got introduced to my team, I said very early on, like, listen, I'm happy to like take a backseat. Like I don't want to be like the backseat driver here. Like, you guys know what you're doing best and I trust you. But I do have some contacts and people, like, you know, I work with you guys at HarperCollins. And they said, there's some people that I work with pretty regularly at Harper that I think, like, if you're okay with it, I can reach out, because I feel like that little personal connection can also kind of help push something over the finish line. And they were super great about it. They're very much like, listen, we trust you. You know what you're doing. Just keep us like posted as things progress. So they have been really, really great partners. They've been doing a lot of their own fantastic work, but they've also given me the room to kind of let them know things that I was interested in doing and kind of letting me take the lead there too, because I do know how to do it.
And has it been successful, that approach?
It has. It has. I think like tag teaming that way has really helped, because they're handling a lot of the stuff. Like, I don't pitch YA at work. I work on adult books. So they're handling a lot of things in the YA market that I'm not familiar with. And I'm able to reach out to a lot of the people that I work with pretty regularly at Harper. And I've gotten a lot of great responses from people, because it's not just a pitch about a random book. It's somebody that you know and have worked with pretty regularly. And I think that's been a really great approach, as we've kind of been dividing and conquering on what each of us knows best.
Yeah. So you're so positive about the selling of books. Is there anything in this experience that has been awful or hard or difficult that you've had to really work to step up over?
I wouldn't say anything's been awful. I'm an eternal optimist, if you can't tell. But I think something that surprised me of being more difficult than I expected is I thought I would be a lot less nervous as we got closer to pub day, because, you know, I work on 18 books a year at HarperCollins. Like, I see pub days at, like, pretty much every other week one of my books is on sale at some point. Like, I'm very familiar with that, and I know it's not scary, and I know what's going on behind the scenes, and I know when I don't talk to one of my authors for a few weeks, I know, like, I'm still pitching and stuff. Like, I know what's going on behind the scenes. As we've gotten closer to pub day, though, I have been very nervous. I thought I would be very not nervous, because I've been around this block so many times. But I think being on the other side, there's something about it that's so intimidating. I think before my first podcast interview, which I do media training for my authors before podcast interviews, I know how to conduct an interview. And still before my first one, I called one of my writer friends and I was like, I'm having a panic attack. I can't do this. I'm so nervous. And then like it ended up being fine. But I think I was surprised at how nervous I felt, because I really didn't think I was going to, because I was experienced in publishing. Yeah. But I think even working in publishing doesn't save you from the nerves of your first book coming out in the world. I've learned that now. So that's been a difficult thing to learn.
Yeah, yeah. So for our listeners who are in what I'll call writer adjacent fields, so that's so many of us out there, because it's hard to grow up and say, I'm going to be a writer and make my living as a writer. And we all go into PR, communications, or we're a librarian or a book reviewer, you know, whatever the thing is. What would you say to them about approaching that moment where they're going to step to the other side? Do you have any words of wisdom?
I think definitely finding writer friends that have been through it has been really helpful. I'm really, really good friends with Kale Walther, who is a New York Times bestselling romance writer for YA romance. She's actually moderating my launch event, which I'm very excited about. But so she had published several books before, and I think it was really helpful, because as I was getting things, as I was moving through the publishing process and getting my edit letter and getting the first pass pages to look at and doing my first podcast interviews and stuff like that, like she was one of the people I called. I think having somebody who's been down the road beforehand that you know in a friendly setting that you can just send a text like, hey, I'm nervous, or hey, how did this work for you? how did your launch event go? Were there things you would do differently? Like having somebody you can kind of bounce those questions off of, I think has eased a lot of the worry because, you know, your team can be great and give you a lot of advice, but having someone who actually did it before, I think has helped me considerably. Like when I got my edit letter and I was like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. And she was like, well, here's how I approach it. And here's tips that help me with my edits. If that helps you, like talking to somebody that did it before, I think really eased a lot of anxiety.
That's awesome.
Was there a wall for you when it, so like you said, your publicity team at the publisher does some of the pitching, but you've done some of the pitching. Yeah. You pitched us. And when you pitch a book you did not write, you are free to heave all the laudatory comment and talk about how much you love it. Was it hard to do that for your own book?
I think it was. I think for me, I know I wrote a good book. I'm proud of the book I've written, but I think there's always that like level of imposter syndrome. Like I'm listening to the audiobook of my book right now and Shannon Tayo, she did an excellent job. Like, it's nothing against her, but I'm reading it. I'm like, oh my God, is this book bad? Like, is it just like, but then it's like, I have to remind myself. And I talk to my writer friends who tell me that is very normal. Like, I've read this book probably 50 times already. Like, you're tired of hearing it. Yeah. So like, I think that's kind of ties back to what I was saying of like, it's helpful to have somebody who's been through it. Cause then when I text my friends and I say, oh my God, like, I feel like a sham. I don't know how I got a book deal. Like, this book is terrible. And they're like, you're just feeling that because you've read the book 50 times and everybody feels that way. That's totally normal. So that was kind of like the wall I hit. When I did Past Pages for the first time, I felt the same way. I was like, oh my God, this book is so boring. And they're like, no, it's boring because you know exactly what happens already. You created it. Like, but then when I see reviewers reading it and tagging me in posts, like they're so excited and they really, really loved it. And it makes me realize that maybe like, that is just imposter syndrome. And it comes for everybody, no matter who you are. I think everybody starts to doubt themselves a little bit as it gets closer.
But we all have to jump over that in order to ask our friends to share it. And in your case, to ask podcasts to have you on, we have to put that aside. So
absolutely.
I'm just wondering if you have anything useful to say to all of us who are also doing that about just like going, okay, just no, all those feelings are here. Here's a box. We're putting them in here and we're pitching. How did you do that?
I tried my best to compartmentalize, which I know is like so much easier said than done, but I will give myself like, okay, you have one day to sulk about this and think it's terrible. And then tomorrow you're going to wake up and whether or not you believe it, you're going to tell everybody it's the best damn book in the world and they need to read it. So even like the fake it till you make it approach, like I know that is cliche and people say that a lot, but it is true. Like I will say like, all right, I don't care. I might not think this book is great right now, but I'm going to pitch it like I think it's the best thing since sliced bread, because that's what people pick up on in your pitches, is that they can tell when you're excited about a book, whether it's yours or somebody else's that I'm pitching. People respond to that they can tell when you're going to someone and saying this is something exciting that you don't want to miss out on. So if I have to just like paste on a smile and make myself say it, eventually you do start to believe it.
I love that so much. And I think it's a great place for us to end this Write Big session. Thank you for joining us, Jessica, and letting us see behind the scenes. And for our listeners, until next time, stop playing small and write like it matters.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.